This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Thursday afternoon, April 18th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The market for electric vehicles is developing more slowly than projected. We'll discuss why in our next segment. But right now, it's a big day of data involving the housing market, the leading economic indicators, and jobless claims. Let's take a look at what the numbers mean with Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. And when it comes to the slow pace of home sales, especially in the month of March, we can blame those pesky mortgage rates once again.
Absolutely. What we've seen is every time mortgage rates have moved above that sort of 7% threshold, we've seen the demand for housing pull back. What was interesting in the month was that we actually saw first-time buyers as a share of total buyers, although off of smaller base, actually increased. So it really underscores how much pent-up demand there is out there. And mortgage rates have really skyrocketed. We saw stronger sales earlier in the year because they had come down so much in late 2023 and early 2024. Now we're starting to feel the pinch of those higher rates. And even with that, home values continue to rise relative to a year ago, more than 4% on median home values. And that's important as well because it's still not seeing the kind of cooling that the Fed would like to see in the overall housing market. It has frozen the housing market in activity, but not prices. And that's something that's been very different from what we've seen in the past. Usually when mortgage rates went up, it has slowed down the pace of appreciation, but not enough to really calm the Fed to basically cut rates at this point in time. And even the leading indicators, which have been sort of contracting, are contracting less, and they're not signaling that the economy is actually falling apart. Remember, the leading indicators were contracting as the economy was accelerating in the second half of 2023 as well. So it's just showing that the economy continues to attempt to normalize, but you know, normal is not back to the subdued pace we saw back in the 2010s without any inflation. And that's the challenge the Federal Reserve faces today.
On the housing side of the equation, I want to pull back just a little bit, just to talk about inventory. And that is, inventory is up 14.5% compared to March of last year. So there are homes for sale that people can move into. The market is not completely locked up. But on the rental side of things, and this is one of the things powering the increases in the CPI, is that there is just a lack of housing in some parts of the country. And is there something that can be done outside of interest rates to alleviate that, especially in some parts of the country where there may be some zoning barriers to building more housing?
Well, you hit the nose on the head and nail on the head there, and that is the issue of zoning. And what we've seen is, particularly in 2 and 4 flats, back in 1975 when we had an overbuilding in multifamily space, we built 143,000 2 and 4 flats. Those were once the ladder for many lower income households to to climb on the ladder of wealth and ownership by being able to move into a two-flat, maybe rent to their family or other renters, and then be able to move up in wealth by owning the property outright. Zoning laws restricting, one, that we be on very big lots that caused urban sprawl and bigger homes to be built, the McMansions we once saw out there. But we've also seen this disappearance. Only 14,000 two- and four-flats were built last year. That's a very small number of what were considered affordable housing and a rung on the ladder to wealth for many home buyers. So zoning plays a very large role. And those cities that have tackled some of their zoning issues, like Minneapolis, St. Paul, have seen much more affordability and a much more balanced housing market, opening up the door to more buyers and more renters as well. And that's really important because we've seen the ranks of the working homeless also rise. And what we found is it's not, there's new studies out that it's not just someone losing a job that they become homeless. They actually, over time, chronically low incomes, only a minor shock to the systems, maybe a doctor's bill or a hospital bill they can't pay, all of a sudden forces them into homelessness while they're still working. These are things that we have to deal with that are structural problems in the overall market.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, there are some bumps in the road for the growth of electric vehicles.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The transition to electric vehicles is taking place more slowly than expected. Let's look at some of the factors with John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. John, thank you for joining us today. And what are some of the reasons why the market for electric vehicles has stalled out in the last couple of years?
Well, you know, it's only been in the last year, and they haven't really stalled out. It's that the rate of growth is not as great as it was just a year and a half, 2 years ago. But I think the reason that it slowed down is that EVs are perfect for some people, but they're not perfect for everyone. And all the people that it was perfect for, I'm not going to say all of them have come into the market, but a huge amount of them have. And now what we need to see are electric vehicles that are not as costly, that have a place where they can recharge publicly. And I think once those two things are addressed, you're going to see sales pick up again. Now, but having said that, I don't see those needs to be met for probably another 2 to 3 years.
It's interesting you mentioned that the cost is a real factor for some people, because I was talking to somebody else who said, yeah, I would buy an electric car, but I would really like just a cheap electric car, one that doesn't have all of the computerized bells and whistles, one that I can just use for driving around town, because if such a thing were available, if there was a Ford Escort or Plymouth Omni of electric cars, John, they would buy it.
Well, there is. There actually is, Rob. So, for example, the Chevrolet Bolt. Now, it's gone out of production. It'll be back in production again next year. But dealers still have them on their lot. Depending on the model you're getting, the base model is $27,000, $28,000. If you apply the $7,500 tax credit you can get for buying an electric, you can buy one for $20,000. I mean, that's very affordable. The Nissan Leaf is another one that you can get for about $20,000. So people who complain that there's not a cheap little electric car for them to buy, there absolutely is.
Yeah, so basically just look beyond Tesla, and like you said, you will find it. The other one, though, seems to be range anxiety, and that is you know where a gas station is, but if your battery is running low, you may not know where to find a nearby charging station, and that's a real problem for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's no question. People have a lot of concern about that. But, you know, what I tell people is that, number one, if you're looking to get an electric car, I recommend leasing them, not buying them. But that's my recommendation. And I say that because at the end of the year lease, there's going to be new electric cars out with far more range. They'll charge a whole lot faster and they will not cost as much. But having said that, if you want to buy an electric right now, if you drive less than 200 miles a day, and if you can come home or maybe even to an apartment where you can plug in at night, you're going to love an electric car. It is absolutely going to meet all your needs. Now, if you drive more than that every single day, or if you like to take long trips, or you do not have a place to charge at home, maybe you want to wait, because those issues are going to take, like I said, another 2 to 3 years to get resolved.
John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, trouble is looming in the commercial real estate market.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A report from data provider Adam shows commercial real estate foreclosures more than doubled in March. Let's look at the issues behind those scary numbers with Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And we know the commercial real estate space has been under a lot of stress since the shift to remote work 4 years ago. A lot of offices realizing they don't need three floors when one would do just as well. But that's not the only source of stress for the commercial real estate space.
No, it's not. You hit the nail on the head when you say scary. The situation is not theoretical, like you just quoted. This is actually happening. Year over year, we're up over 100% on commercial real estate foreclosures. And in some states like California, that's over, it's over 400%. And the real problem with this one, it's the worst case scenario. It's the perfect storm. People aren't going back to work in the office buildings, like you said. And interest rates are very, very high. And it doesn't, you know, there's less and less optimism that there will be relief anytime soon. So those payments, the owners of these commercial properties, and we're talking about everything from office space to retail to industrial, those loans are all adjustable. They all move up when interest rates move up and down when they go down. So now we have lower and lower occupancy with higher and higher monthly debt service. And what makes this situation unique from ones in the past, and we've been through these cycles before, the problem is that in the past, when there was always a buyer waiting to come in and pick up real estate at distressed equity prices, they were always there. The buyers were always lining up and waiting to try to come in and get deals. Well, now there's really no such thing as a good deal, no matter how cheap we make a commercial property. If there's nobody lining up to rent the space, no deal is good enough. So this is really a unique problem in our economic history.
And does this have the potential to undo this strong economy we have right now? I mean, how much bank exposure exists in the commercial real estate sector?
Well, it's an amount that will really make the subprime mortgage crisis look like a brush fire in the face of a forest fire. The only money banks have to lend is the money that we put on deposit with them. And if they loan that money out and we have all these foreclosures where they're taking back in buildings instead of cash, the stress is going to be massive.
Some sobering thoughts from Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, hackers are targeting the accounts of the recently deceased.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, now and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A man shot and killed by Chicago police last month had been wounded in a confrontation with a relative several years before his death. A famous political family says no to one of its own. In Technology Thursday, a sinister scam involves cyber criminals monitoring obituary sites to identify potential targets. It's the time of year for weddings and graduation parties. We'll talk about how much you should give when attending those events. WBBM Business, markets are mixed. The Dow is up 6.25. The NASDAQ is down 37. S&P 500 down 5. 57 degrees right now in Chicago with light rain at 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. A new report details that Dexter Reed had been wounded by a relative several years before he was shot and killed by Chicago police last month. The update from WBBM's Nancy Hardy.
The Sun-Times reports Dexter Reed attacked his uncle with a kitchen knife while threatening to kill him in August of 2021. The paper cites police reports that say the uncle shot Reed in the back and groin during the altercation in the family's home. Reed was in a coma for weeks and struggled both mentally and physically afterwards. The paper says he filed a handful of lawsuits after the shooting, including one in which he said, quote, "I'm physically disabled and mentally unstable with PTSD, short-term memory loss, slurred speech." Weeks before he died in a shootout with police, Reed posted to Facebook, "Sometimes I feel like giving up, but I'm living for me." Nancy Hardy, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Members of the Kennedy family are set to endorse President Biden in Philadelphia today, despite Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s independent bid for the White House. More from CBS News campaign correspondent Aaron Navarro.
The significance of the Kennedy family coming out now is that it's a blow to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s challenge to President Biden. And the source familiar with the Biden campaign's planning told me that this has been months in the making and that the Kennedy family came forward because they wanted to send a message kind of to their relative RFK Jr.
15 members of the Kennedy family plan to attend the Biden event today. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Stocks are lower today. Let's see what's dragging down the markets with Jim Holtzman, president and CEO of Legend Financial Advisors in Pittsburgh. Find him on X at James Holtzman. Jim, thanks for joining us today. And it seems like there's a common theme in the markets this week, and that is they have a hard time holding on to gains, and that there could be a strong open, but around noontime, that rally runs out of gas.
Yeah, we've seen that certainly over the last couple of days, and I think it's more of the same as it relates to interest rates. With some of the inflation reports coming out higher, you're just seeing a continual stabilization of interest rates versus seeing them go down. And that impacts everything from the mortgage market with long-term rates staying higher, and then also on the short-term side in terms of money market rates, which is good for investors that have cash. But as far as the market impact goes, it's looking more at the longer-term interest rate cycle with inflation projected to be holding on a little bit longer than expected.
And with bond yields creeping up once again, will we see kind of a maybe not a flight out of equities and into bonds, but maybe a steady trickle out of the stock market and into the bond market because of those higher yields?
Yeah, and I think it's part of what we're seeing, too, is because the bond market is one of the highest points we've seen in almost 20 years. And one of the benefits of that, at least as far as traditional bonds go with fixed interest rates, is it does give a chance to get some better returns out of that part of your portfolio that we really haven't seen much over the last 20 years. And so this is another opportunity, even though rates had come down a little bit, now they're kind of jumping back up to where they were. And that gives investors another chance to kind of do a relook at their portfolios.
And there was a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning about how a number of large pension funds, including the Public Employees Pension Fund in California, the largest in the country, were rotating into the bond market. And what kind of a signal does that send? Is that the type of a flashing siren that you could see from like space?
I think with pension funds, it's a little bit of a different situation where they're really trying to lock in longer rates at higher rates for a longer term because they're trying to match the payouts that they have to meet. And this is a really good opportunity for pension funds to consider doing that. There's that price to pay, though, because they're probably rotating out of equities into the bond market, which does put some downward pressure on the stock market.
And also from the individual investor standpoint, I mean, the three major indices have been an incredible run, especially in the first quarter. Why not pocket some of those gains and quit while you're ahead and then check out the bond yields for a while?
And the other part of that, and I agree with that, and I think the other part will be is that, you know, long-term rates will eventually come down maybe a little more consistently. And if you're locking in bonds with a higher rate today, you're going to get the higher rate, but you're also going to get a little bit of appreciation when long-term rates start to go down too. So there's a couple of reasons why it does make sense, and you're seeing maybe some relooks from individual investors too.
Earnings season continues, and so far it seems like the first quarter reports that have come in have exceeded expectations.
Yeah, it does. Certainly Netflix notwithstanding with their Tesla. With theirs, their report's not coming in so good. And I believe Netflix is releasing their earnings today, so that'll be interesting to see as well. But so far, it's been pretty good.
And Netflix is going to be interesting, not only just to take a look at its corporate performance, but also just take a look at the streaming space writ large, because it seems like there has been a reckoning in the past year or so, especially as the business model changed on a dime from being rewarded for subscriber growth to once again being rewarded for revenue growth. Netflix has managed to thread that needle, but a lot of other media companies under a lot of stress because they have not been able to do that.
Absolutely. And Netflix has actually come up pretty well after their efforts over the last year or two in terms of locking down multiple usage of the same login information. They were really worried about that initially, but they've gotten through that period really well too. So they're going to be probably one of the stronger ones left.
Jim Holtzman, President and CEO of Legend Financial Advisors in Pittsburgh, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, beware of the so-called ghost hackers.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday, and a disturbing cybercrime involves crooks tracking obituaries and death notices for potential targets. Let's learn about it and ways to fight it with Adam Levin, founder of Cyber Scout, host of the podcast What the Hack with Adam Levin, author of the book Swiped, based in Nashville, Tennessee. Adam, thank you for joining us today. And how does this particular scam work?
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me. Well, first of all, think of these guys as cyber ghouls. And what they do is they case obituaries and death notices like burglars would case houses, and they're looking for targets. And once they find a target, what they'll do is try to figure out weak passwords. They'll guess security questions, which, as you know, a lot of people have the answers to those questions unknowingly on social media. Or they'll buy stuff from the dark web or stuff that they were able to get through breaches of websites. And then they use it to do what's called credential stuffing, which is they crawl into bank accounts, retirement accounts, social media accounts. So the best way to kind of fight these guys is to go offensively at it.
And what, I mean, once somebody defines the social media profile of somebody who has died, is that just the way in the door to all of this other sensitive information? And if, you know, obviously there's a lot to think about if you have lost a relative or a loved one, should we add cybersecurity to that list of things you have to consider as you perform the end of life machinery?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, in addition to doing things like notify credit reporting agencies that your loved one has passed, making sure they have death certificates and notifying all the institutions, you really have to craft a plan that protects their social media accounts. Now, some people and more people, and you should be doing it, everyone's listening, is you can set up what's called a legacy manager. And that is someone that can manage your social media accounts. And each platform has a different process as to what you need to do to set that up, as well as what kind of access these people are going to have. And you also can set a predetermined time within which your account will continue to live past the day that you die. But just like you have an estate plan, you can have a digital estate plan. So if I'm putting one together for one of my for a legacy contact to follow, I'd want to inventory all my accounts, all my passwords, all my online assets, and a clear rundown of how they get to it. That doesn't have to be a formal document. It can be just a note, but it should be password protected. You should talk about the websites you're on, the login information that they would need to get on those accounts, and then you password protect the file with a long and strong password. And the files you would need to protect would be email, social media, financial, cloud storage, streaming services, online shopping accounts, and loyalty programs.
And then very quickly, Adam, and this might be a tangential issue, but you talk about how hackers can find some of your personal information and find the answers to password questions just by combing your social media sites. And there's a trend, and this happens to me, and I'm sure this happens to a lot of people, where you're on Facebook or Instagram, you get a friend request from an attractive lady, let's put it that way, and you don't know them, you have no personal friends, they're writing in broken English, and I block those accounts immediately. And this is not necessarily because I don't like the idea of being hoodwinked, but I just think this is somebody trying to get access to my personal information and using a pretty face to do it.
Oh, they're not only trying to get access to your personal information, but they're trying to lure you in to communicating with them where they could get you into a romance scam, a cryptocurrency scam, or use it to get financial information, personal information, or money. So you really have to be careful. If someone just shows up and like says, oh, is this Mary's phone? You know you're not Mary. Just don't even respond.
Adam Levin, founder of Cyber Scout, host of the podcast What the Hack with Adam Levin, author of the book Swiped, based in Nashville. Thank you for joining us on this Technology Thursday.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Tis the season for weddings, graduations, and other gift-giving events. Let's discuss what's appropriate with Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst with Bankrate.com in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And if you have a graduate in your life or someone is celebrating a bar or bat mitzvah or a first communion, you're spending a minimum $100 on their gift. And if you have a friend who is getting married, the honor of being asked to stand up in that wedding is offset by the fact that you got to buy a suit, you got to buy a dress, you got to get a hotel room. So how can you navigate this season, Ted, without breaking the bank?
You're right. It's all very expensive. I think the biggest fix is to set a good budget ahead of time. A lot of times people either don't set a budget or if they do, they only account for the necessities. I think it's really important to budget for these extras. You may not even know exactly what they're going to be, but let's face it, summer's coming up. You want to have fun, right? You might get invited to weddings, you might get invited to concerts or meals out or sporting events or whatever it is. Set money aside from every paycheck so that this doesn't end up going on a credit card, because the average interest rate there, if you carry a balance, is over 20%.
And then when it comes to going through gift-giving season, you know, obviously you want to be generous. I mean, you love these people in your life. But are there some good rules of thumb for making sure you don't go overboard with gifts? Like, is there some sort of Emily Post guide to giving gifts for certain situations?
I think going in on a group gift could actually be a nice way to pool resources and maybe get something larger off the wedding registry without shouldering a huge burden individually. We found in our most recent wedding survey that the average wedding guest is spending $180 on gifts, plus $144 on attire and grooming, and $287 on travel and accommodations. I mean, all of that adds up to about $600 per wedding. And this stuff does get really expensive. So I think there are potentially some ways to, you know, I was going to say cut corners. I don't really want it to sound like a negative, but, you know, ways to save money, whether it's going in on a group gift or group accommodations, or, hey, I mean, if you're crafty, maybe you can make something nice for the bride and groom. Or, you know, sometimes people are doing honeymoon registries these days where you can give money towards experiences like, you know, excursions or meals out on the honeymoon. I mean, I know that sort of thing can be expensive too, but maybe there's some safety in numbers. And I also think sometimes the right answer is hey, I'm really sorry, I just can't make it. You know, maybe you send a small gift, but especially if it's a destination wedding, if it's really going to blow the budget, I think sometimes there's a tactful way to say, I'm sorry, I just can't swing it.
Yeah, Ted, just to say, look, you know, enjoy getting married on top of the active volcano. We'll look at pictures, but we'll go out for drinks after we're done. Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.